This is Phil Varen, and I am driving home. Eventually, I'm not at work this week, so my wife looked at me at one point, she said, "So, the podcast, are you just gonna drive around for a while?" And I said, "Well, I do have some movies that I need to take back to Redbox, so maybe I'll just start this up, drive into town, which is 10 minutes, drop off the movies for Redbox, then I'll just drive back home." So I will be driving home eventually, but right now I'm driving into town. It is episode 196. Won't be too long before we'll be to 200. Won't be too long before there's a little bouncy place on my driveway as we go from the gravel drive onto the blacktop. Won't be too long before we'll be at 4 years. 4 years for the podcast. I have to figure out who's going to go with me on the podcast at the four-year mark since we didn't have anybody on the three-year. I may bug my friend again to see if he's ready to do the podcast yet. Anyways, it's been a great week. You know, in some ways, it's been a little bit too good of a week. You know, you get a week off, and especially this week, we've had a chance to spend a lot of time with our kids and our grandchild, and just been really, really nice. We had my parents and Lynette's parents over for Christmas, and they were actually planning to take off Christmas Day to go down to Oklahoma, and then there was some weather that moved in, so they didn't go, but they had already offered their home to another couple's kids who were coming in, so they actually just came out and stayed with us for a couple of days because their house was otherwise occupied. So that was fun. And we've just enjoyed spending time together and playing games and talking. And it's been really, really good. I could get used to this lifestyle of not having to go and engage in work that is designed solely to produce some money. But you know, we all have things that we need to do. Oh, by the way, I do have to make one other stop as well. We'll see if I can do this without stopping the recorder. My wife needed a deposit made, so I'm going to go by and make a deposit as well. But I think she has all the instructions in there that I won't need to pause the recorder. We'll see. If I suddenly stop talking and cut out, that's what that was. Anyways, I'm still working on Amanda and the Skullyberry Tree, the map. I'm making what I think is some good progress on there. It looked like for a while that it was going to need to be seven books as opposed to five books all told, but now it's kind of working its way back around that I think five is going to be okay. In Amanda and the Skullyberry Tree, I had decided to call the unit of currency the pengo. And I didn't just pull that out of the air. In fact, there was a short-lived Hungarian currency called pengos. In just after World War II, Hungary issued the pengo and got hit with such hyperinflation that and within just a couple of years, they decided to discontinue it and go to the krona, which I think they're on now. But I believe the pengo has the highest denomination ever recorded for paper currency. They started out just normal one pengo, two pengos. In fact, some of them were coins. Then they had to go to paper and eventually had gotten up into the million pengo bills. And so then they decided, well, we'll just make million pengos. So they could just make a 10 million pengo or 100,000 million pengo or a 100 million million pengo bill. And the hyperinflation kept increasing to the point that they decided to go to billion pengo bills. So a 1 billion pengo bill was 1 billion pengos. The highest bill they ever printed was a 100 million billion pengo bill. So I've actually ordered one of those, got one of those coming in, and I may find a way to sort of work that number into Amanda in this, well, Farforth Fables is really what it is. May find a way to work that into Farforth Fables before it's all said and done. So that's going to be fun. I've had a chance to reflect a little bit more on my place in the universe as a writer, as a human being. And I really am coming back over and over again to this idea that validation is not how many you sell. That's always, it's always in any creative endeavor, in any business endeavor, it's always about the numbers. That's what the flesh would point us to. Striving for those numbers. You know, I watched a television special on the 25th anniversary of Michael Jackson's Bad album, and certainly he has the numbers. But he was never satisfied with the numbers. Every number had to be bigger. And for Bad, they said before it came out, what he'd always do is take a Sharpie and write on the mirrors 100 million, because that was his goal. It was selling 100 million. And if it wasn't number one on the charts, he was bugging his marketing people. Why aren't we number one on the charts? We have to be number one on the charts. There was never an end to it. There was never a satisfaction. There was always, we have to get to the bigger number. And that's really the way of the flesh. It's always trying to get us to a bigger number. And it's in everything. You know, people judge books by how many have you sold. And that, in order to get there, of course, you have to be known by a lot of people. And I've just really kind of decided that's not the path that I want to pursue. I really want to pursue a path of what has this book done for the people that I am in relationship with. Not even how many people has this book affected, because then you're back into a number game. But of the people I am in relationship with, how has this book affected them? And I've had some really positive response from that. And so it's really, for me, I'm trying to keep it to, I'm going to write stuff, as I said before, I write for dozens. I'm going to write stuff that for the people around me will allow me to help them reflect on their lives and perhaps think about the things they're doing and perhaps even make a change because they see there might be some better way to do it. So I still write for dozens. And I've adjusted my little saying a little bit to, it is now, okay, fine. I'm going to stand on the edge of the great abyss that all creative projects disappear into and very few are ever heard of again. And I'm simply going to chuck my little stories into that great abyss after I affect the lives of my readers, and if they disappear and never come back, that's just fine. I'm driving into the drive-thru, so let me get this taken care of, and then we'll talk some more. Okay, so I'm at the drive-in. It's actually being paused for, I don't know when this will stop pausing and just shut off, so I went ahead and took it off pause. Apparently, they're not allowed to give me cash back because my wife isn't here, and this is just a little account that she uses for herself. So they're figuring it all out, so we're just depositing it all and not getting any cash back. But I'll be back with you in just a few moments later, but of course, we're going to time compression, so you won't even hear it. Be back soon. Okay, so we got that little piece done, and I just have to deposit some movies at Redbox, and then I will be driving home. Yeah. This is what happens when you're a little bit obsessive about things, because like, well, I have a podcast. I have to do it every week. I have to do it every week. But it's okay. This is what has got me to 196 episodes. And in fact, I need some Gazool as well. So I think I'm going to get some gas here while I'm giving the Redbox movies back. I will be back shortly. Woo! Cold, cold, cold. Cold. Wow, cold. It's, the wind's blowing, so it's only in the 30s, I think, but wow. I know some people say the 30s are not cold, but, you know, the wind's blowing. It's cold for what we do around here. Anyway, so now I am officially driving home. I read an article called The Power of Negative Thinking, which is, of course, a play on the power of positive thinking. And as I was reading through it, I thought, oh, well, here's some... Yeah, I think I recognize these techniques, because they are actually some techniques that I've used in my own life. But it's always interesting to me when there is merely a dealing with the topmost level without building any kind of foundation underneath it, without dealing with the fundamentals of life. And they start the article by talking about how this holiday season is supposed to be a season of joy, and what happens when you don't feel joyful. Well, one approach to it is Norman Vincent Peale's Power of Positive Thinking, that you should just be optimistic. You have a choice. Be optimistic. Think positively. Just believe that everything's going to work all out, and it will, and it'll be great, and ta-da, ta-da, ta-da. But I don't know, it seems to me a little bit wrong-headed to just try to grit your teeth and force yourself to think positively without any underlying pervasive foundation for that. And what I look at as my foundation for thinking positively is that I do believe in a creator. I do believe in a being who is intimately connected with our lives. And honestly, I do believe in the first two observations that the neurologist came back from heaven with, that we talked about several weeks ago, that after he came back from heaven, he said he learned three things. That one, you are loved and cherished more deeply than you can ever imagine. That two, there's nothing to be afraid of. I firmly believe those two. And that three, you can never do anything wrong. Now, I'm still working on that last one, but that's my foundation. I believe in a creator. And I believe that I am a spiritual being having an earthly experience. Now, does that mean I never get discouraged, or, you know, I never second guess myself? Or anything? Of course not. Of course not. However, I recognize that negativity that might sometimes arise in me is simply the flesh trying to distract me from what is truth. That my life is more than these few moments that I will spend in the flesh. And that I will have eternity with Him. And these few moments of challenge that I experience now are simply my opportunity to overcome. They give me an opportunity to live in the Spirit and to enjoy the challenge that is before me of not succumbing to the flesh. So that's the basis I start from. And my positive outlook on life comes from the fact that I do believe that the truth of our existence is positive. It's not like I'm just hoping that it is or gritting my teeth, trying to muscle my way through with a positive attitude. By the same token, I look at negativity as an activity of the flesh. And so when I saw this, the power of negative thinking, I'm thinking, oh, well, let's see what they have to say to see if, in fact, their version of negative thinking is really an activity of the flesh or an activity of the spirit. And so as I was working through this, after they talked about the typical Norman Peel's version of power of positive thinking, they started talking about what they deemed a counterintuitive approach that might be termed the negative path to happiness. And they were talking about a psychotherapist who was one of these pioneers of this. His name was Albert Ellis. He died in 2007, and his key insight was that he went back to the Stoic philosophers of ancient Greece and Rome, who said that sometimes the best way to address an uncertain future is not to focus on the best case scenario, but the worst. Okay, well, I don't disagree with that. They were talking about Seneca the Stoic, who was a radical on this matter. He said, well, if you're afraid of losing your wealth, then what you should do is set aside a certain number of days during which you shall be content with the scantiest and cheapest fare, with coarse and rough dress, saying to yourself all the while, is this the condition I feared? Okay, that's actually pretty good. Because one of the ways the flesh would seek to rob you of your joy, to rob you of your present contentment, is to say, well, but it might just all disappear. And you know, you might lose your house. And you might not have electricity tomorrow. And everything might be bad. Okay, well, one of the great ways to get around that is to experience it and then say, okay, well, this wasn't, you know, the most pleasant path that I would choose in life, but on the other hand, I can survive this. It would be fine. One of the things that this psychotherapist Ellis would tell his people to do is that if they feared embarrassment, that they should ride the New York subway and speak the names of the stations loudly as they passed. Just to see what would happen. And the author of the article said that on this advice, he actually took the central line of London Underground, and he did this, and he said while he did get a few people looking at him strangely, he said, I wasn't verbally harangued and I wasn't physically attacked. Okay, well, so the end did not come if you did something that was a little bit strange. It's a technique that the Stoics used to call the premeditation of evils. And it helps sap the future of its anxiety-producing power. It helps sap the future of that anxiety-producing power. Well, okay, for me, the question is, where is it really the future that has this anxiety-producing power, or is it the flesh? Is the flesh that's trying to project forward and tell you everything's not going to be all right? See, for me, this is just really a flip side of thinking positively. Because if you believe that God is in control and in the future, then the future shouldn't have that much anxiety associated with it in the first place. And even if it does end up having anxiety associated with it, I've done this type of thing before, where if we're in the middle of launching a big new project and there are some uncertainties about it, you know, I tell myself, okay, well, so let's say something goes horribly wrong, then what? Well, then we go in and we try to fix it. And we get it fixed as quickly as we can, you know? And even if that means I need to come in on weekends and work on it on weekends, I'll come in on weekends and work it on weekends. And, you know, then it will be fine. We'll get through it. And as much as I like things to work well and work smoothly when they go in, well, okay, sometimes they don't. And that's just kind of the way it goes. They also went into a big section about how that the positive approach is always to plan and try to get everything nailed down as to what you're going to do and how you're going to do it. And those are the people who have a plan. And they did have some interesting things to say about the fact that planning isn't always the best approach. And one of the reasons they gave for that is they said sometimes, if you've got everything planned out and you have rigid goals, that it might encourage employees to cut ethical corners. Well, yeah, if the plan is the only thing, certainly that could happen. And also that focusing on that one goal at the expense of all the others can distort a corporate mission or an individual life. And that's true, too. But I think what we are having there is a manifestation of the flesh as a reaction to the planning. It's not necessarily the planning that's bad. It's that the flesh is trying to find some way to take the planning, which can be good, and turn it to evil. So by saying, you got to run over here. Never mind that little piece. Just, you know, throw that away and just cheat on that over here because all that's important is the goal. Well, obviously, we should know that there are more important things than just the goal. And also, besides the fixation on our goals, there are some that would say planning is really just a deep unease with feelings of uncertainty. And again, that's actually pretty good. That if the only reason you're planning is to help you feel like you're more in control of the future, that's really not going to work for you because the future is never certain. All we can do is walk towards the future and simply deal with what comes in the future when the future gets here. There's a research by Saris Saravanthani, an associate professor of business administration, who suggests that learning to accommodate feelings of uncertainty is not just the key to a more balanced life, but often leads to prosperity as well, which is pretty interesting. This particular professor noted that a lot of entrepreneurs don't necessarily plan as we think of planning. They do what she calls effectuation. They take stock of the means and materials at their disposal, and then imagine the possible ends, and includes what she calls an affordable loss principle. In other words, they look around and say, well, this is what's in my hand. This is what I can do. What is it going to cost me to attempt this? How much can I afford to lose? And if I can afford to lose it, let's just try it and see what happens. And I have to say, this is kind of what I did with the VaneWorks stand. I couldn't find a reason besides fear not to move forward. And so I moved forward. Now, did I end up selling thousands of the VaneWorks stand? No. Did I learn tons of stuff doing it? Yes. But in 50,000 years, it's not going to make any difference. They did have a great quote from Steven Jobs. Remembering that you are going to die is the best way that I know to avoid the trap of thinking you have something to lose. And that really, that's pretty good. Because at the end of the day, honestly, everything is going to be fine. At the end of the day, We're going to go be with Jesus. And all of these things that we were all tied up in knots about and concerned about, they're just not going to seem that important. So whether it's building the foundation and working on your understanding that God is with you and you can be positive because God is watching out for you and he's going to help you and he's going to strengthen you in all the challenges you face, whether it's that approach or whether you want to combine that with saying, okay, so yes, the potential for failure is here. Let's just think a little bit about what happens if I do fail. Then what? Well, then I get up and dust myself off, and we move forward. That's what happens. And it will all work out. It will just be fine. Because he's with us, and he loves us, and there is nothing to fear. Happy holidays, everyone. Happy 196th episode. I plan to be at work next week, which is going to be interesting because it has been a lovely week off. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.